Welcome back into a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Today, it's all family on the show. We are so excited about the guests we have, and we're really excited about the show that we'll be sharing with you today. We first heard about this earlier this year, and now the time is now. It's here. We cannot wait to take it in. So joining us today, we have the great playwright, Joey Merlo, and the director, Nick Rao. Both of these amazing artists have a new production coming to town called Midnight Coleslaw's Tales from Beyond the Closet. It's playing May 31st through June 23rd at The Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. We've had the very, very distinct honor of having both of these artists on our show previously, and it was actually Joey who most recently mentioned this show to us as it was coming down the pipeline. So we are so excited to have them both back here and to be talking about this fabulous show. So let us welcome back on Joey, Nick. So good to see you. Welcome back to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hi, thanks for having you.
It's so good to see you. It's so good to be talking with you. And I'm, again, I can't say this enough. I'm so excited about this show. This is probably in the top five most anticipated shows for me of the summer. I'm all giddy about this. Midnight Coleslaw's Tales from Beyond the Closet. Joey, as the playwright, why don't we have you first tell us a little bit about what this piece is about?
Well, wait, Andrew, I just have to say that I'm honored. One of your top five shows, and I'm so happy to be here with, you know, you're just so positive and lovely to talk to, and so thank you. I mean, you know, Tales from Beyond the Closet, these are kind of stories beyond the coming out, the traditional coming out story or narrative. But thanks for all that, Andrew, and thanks for saying that you like the title and that you think it's a catchy title or that it sticks, because others have, you know, made fun of me or kind of gave me a hard time about that title and said, that's the weirdest title. No one's going to remember that title. But I'm glad you appreciate it. The drag host that you're thinking of will be played by Charlene Incarnate, who is an incredible, legendary drag queen and performer. And she will be playing Midnight Coleslaw. And she has a talking skull sidekick named Boner. So there'll be a lot of head jokes. And she hosts this evening that is a triptych of queer horror comedy. There are three plays over the course of the evening. Each one is different, but thematically, they track the intersection of queerness and heteronormativity and the loss of queer community and chosen family to normie culture. And she performs in between each of these with Boner, and there are musical numbers and there are comedy skits, and it's framed in a kind of Elvira Tales from the Crypt type way. So she's this midnight host, and then you have these three unique stories being told. And the stories themselves, while they are psychological horror comedy, dark comedy, I think that they are also pushing back against genre. Some of them are magical realism, some of them are lyric, and some of them are, you know, more, well, actually none of them are really naturalistic, so I take that back. But all of them go to a very deep and real place, and so it's not all camp, although I think camp can go to a very deep and real place too, but they definitely have a core, and they really drop into some serious topics and ideas, and serious questions are asked within each of these stories.
I love all that. Yes, I'm remembering a lot better now because I forgot about the skull, and I remember like immediately in my mind as you were talking, I'm like, yeah, it's like Elvira kind of thing. And then you immediately said that, and I was like, ah. So this is such a fun setup. I love it. Tell me, Joey, how did you come up with the idea for the show?
So 2 years ago, I was finishing grad school and I went to Brooklyn College. That's where I met Nick also. And we had to write these plays for our festival, our graduating festival that is called Bring a Weasel and a Pint of Your Own Blood. It was named by Mac Wellman, the playwright, and someone who ran the program at Brooklyn College for a long time. And so we were given prompts, and around the same time, I was in workshop with Dennis Allen II, the playwright, and he had us do this thing where he brought in oranges and we had to sit with the oranges and we had to, like, for literally 4 hours, like, we had to look at the orange and, like, slowly, like, touch the orange and peel, eventually after hours, like, peel the orange. And, like, eventually, like, you take the orange completely apart. But the whole point was that you have this hyper awareness and fixation on the orange and the textures of the orange skin, et cetera. Also around this time, I was sick and I was like on all this medication and I was having these, you know, really weird dreams. And the dream I had that night was weird because I was not in the dream, but I was watching this young couple and they find this chair that looks like it's made out of skin with dry patches and freckles and ingrown hairs and veins and folds. And I'm watching them with this chair in the dream. And as I'm watching them, this chair morphs into a kind of monstrous humanoid creature. And I think I woke up at that point because I was frightened. But I think in the dream, I sensed this affection they had towards the chair and maybe a competing affection. And so what I ended up kind of sketching that night when I woke up from the nightmare was a kind of polyhorror. And I was also, you know, romantically, I think, experiencing a lot of questions around polyamory versus monogamy, et cetera. So it all kind of came together for me, but I had a lot of fun writing that. And then my two best friends, Rebecca Robertson and Curtis Gillen, I cast in the play, and I wanted them to be in it. They're a couple in real life also. And Curtis actually is a part of Pigpen, and they wrote the Tony nominated musical Water for Elephants. And Curtis wrote a few little songs in this play as well. We'll have to credit him for. But so anyway, Nick and I were paired. We kind of chose each other. Nick was in the directing program at Brooklyn College. And the show got put up. And that was the first one act. And as I was working on it, a lot of people really liked it. And they were like, oh, why don't you expand this? Why don't you make this into a longer play or a film script? And I thought it was kind of perfect the way it was. But I did like the idea of, I always loved Elvira as a kid. And I like the idea of thematically linking it with two other short stories. And I loved, you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark? These shows, anthology shows like Tales from the Crypt. Like, I love these like bite-sized, because I think the best ghost stories are kind of on the shorter side, you know, like they are one acts. And so you can sit around a campfire and you can tell, everyone goes around and tells this story. And so I wanted to create a trio of stories that felt like that, that gave you that experience of sitting in the dark together and watching, you know, watching and listening to these scary stories. And then to have a host, that was also an early idea to kind of tie it all together with this midnight host. And, you know, again, riffing off of the Elvira Crypt Keeper type character.
I love all that. Yes. You were totally tapping into my childhood with all of that.
I just wanted to mention, when we were paired to do Chair, I don't know if I ever told you this, Joey, but we had a meeting where we were talking about who was going to be paired with which pieces for the festival. And I mean, Brooklyn College's playwriting program is incredible. And so all of them were so strong and everyone was kind of like, oh, I'd be happy with all of them, which I said as well. But I really, and I don't normally do this, but I really fought for Chair because I immediately was just blown away by the writing. And I never experienced a play that could operate in the absurd while also being so truthful and realistic at the same time, which I really think you accomplished so beautifully with this couple who fall in love with this inanimate object, so to speak. And it's such an absurd premise, yet the way that it unfolds, like the level of comedy and the way that it's written, I've never experienced anything like it. So I was like, I'm not doing any piece, I'm doing Joey's piece. And it was a happy pairing. I mean, because I fell in love with Curtis and I fell in love with the script. And I'm just so glad that now we have this opportunity to visit again and in this expanded version.
That is so wonderful. Well,
and Andrew, I also have to say, just to, you know, put a button on that experience, I, you know, it ended up being a really hard, it was just a hard couple of years. I lost my father the spring before graduating. And then that spring, we lost my godmother, my aunt, who was like very, you know, the second closest person to me out of my aunts and uncles. And so I had to leave, you know, like right as rehearsals were beginning, and I couldn't be there. And I hate that. I hate not being in the room, especially for something that's so new. And I, you know, this was something that really made me, that gives me I feel very trustful of Nick and really admire Nick, because this doesn't always happen, but I came back and it was like someone had read my mind. It was just like everything had come together so perfectly and beautifully and even better than I had imagined it. And I knew, like, and I was feeling better because I was, you know, I was worried at first, and then I was getting text messages from people in my cohort who were watching dress rehearsals and things who were like, this is really good. Like, yours is really good. And like, Nick's doing a really great job. And I thought, okay, I hope they're telling me the truth and not just trying to make me feel better because I'm like at this family, you know, I'm grieving a family member and I'm at a funeral. And then I came back and I was blown away. So, you know, I was so happy that we were able to work together. And that really, you know, that really kind of like solidified for me that Nick was the person I wanted to direct this when I turned it into a larger piece of theater.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I mean, I'm sorry that that's the journey that you had to go on to get here, but I'm so happy that it's worked out on the other side. That's so wonderful. Nick, coming back to you as the director, I'm so curious to know, what has it been like developing this piece, particularly for this upcoming run at the Tank?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it has just been a blast. We have such an incredible group. We have Curtis and Rebecca. We also have Jan Leslie Harding, Edgar Oliver, Amanda Hauser, Charlene Incarnate, and Priscilla Flores, John William Watkins. I mean, the group is just extremely eclectic. And so at first I was like, wow, how is this all going to come together? But we have these beautiful little pods in each act. And then we had our first stumble through on Monday, and it was like a celebration. There was so much queer joy in the room. I mean, everyone was like giddy to see what tricks and treats were in store from the other acts. And I mean, I think the fact that this is a showcase of like three different stories that kind of intersect beautifully, I think is reminiscent of how diverse and complex the queer community is. And so I think putting them all together and then framing them in this, you know, this drag extravaganza is really, it's a celebration. And so the process has very much felt that way. Not all processes feel like celebratory. They can feel scary at times. And so it's really felt like a gift to be in the room with this group and to be able to dig into this script, which as funny and as camp as it is, it also really, each act has a beautiful, truthful core to it, which has also, I think, been rejuvenating to get to grapple with and to get to explore with this group. So.
So wonderful. Joyous. Yeah. I don't know if y'all are doing work. It sounds like y'all are just having fun. Joey, let me come back to you. As the playwright of this piece, with this great campiness and fun and what have you, is there a message or a thought you hope audiences take away from Midnight Coleslaw?
I think that it is about, you know, I think we want people to walk away feeling like they are a part of a community, feeling that they're not isolated. And, you know, whether you're straight or queer, we can all work together. We can support each other. We can support each other as in a familial kind of way, that we can build communities and chosen family. And that can, you know, extend beyond that theater space, I hope. I think it really ends on a note of chosen family and community and the importance of coming together and supporting one another and creating that sense of family.
I love that. Nick, anything you'd like to add to that?
I think Joey said it beautifully. I mean, just to add to it briefly, it's like we're inviting you into this world, into Midnight's lair, and it's participatory. You know, you're a part of this ephemeral community, and I'm excited for people to experience that, to really experience like the gift of being together I think we live in a very fragmented time. There's like a deterioration of community in many ways as everything moves online and as like safe spaces are questioned and threatened. And so I think we're really creating a space, and we're inviting people into a space in which we can, exercise the demons of the campy horror genre, but also then celebrate the act of being together, which is in and of itself a gift.
That is a beautiful thought. I love that. And now we've arrived at my final question for the first part, which, Nick, I'm going to start with you. And of course, that is, who do you hope have access to this piece?
Oh, this is a great question. I mean, one of the things I love about the cast is that it's diverse in regards to age. And so I really hope that a lot of young people are drawn by the drag aspect of it. I think it's an art form that's like really big right now with Drag Race. And so I hope we get that audience pool. But a lot of the central characters are in their 60s and 70s. And so I think there's a great opportunity for this intergenerational conversation and exchange amongst queer people. I think it's happening on stage. And so I hope that happens in the audience as well. I hope we get people who are very young and have just come out, and people who have been living in their truth for years. So I am excited to have people on both ends of that spectrum.
That is wonderful. Joey, anything you want to add to that?
Just that I think the show is accessible for everyone. And I, at the same time, think that these stories are very much for the queer community, and the horrors are, there are situations that are specifically and idiosyncratically scary and horrific to the queer community, which doesn't mean that there's not universality in those experiences. I mean, like so many horror films are, I think, depicting things that are scary. The best horror films are depicting those things specifically that are scary to groups or communities of people. And I think this is kind of turning some of those narratives on their head, because for a long time, like especially in like, what someone would argue is like the height of horror, like the 1970s with Dario Argento and some of these other movies like Prom Night and Sleepaway Camp, you have very queer phobic narratives at the heart of those films. And I won't give away certain things about them, but like literally like the monster is the trans person, or the monster is the queer person. The reveal is that, like, so I feel like we're kind of turning that on its head, or turning it inside out and saying, we're not the only ones that like you should be afraid of. Like, we're afraid of you. Like, let me show you situations that like the queer community is afraid of. Like, let's get into like our psychology. Let's go deep into like, our subconscious fears and seedy desires, and the fears, it's fear is all about the unknown. So it makes sense that, through the years, queerness, something that was hidden, was this monster. People didn't even know what it looked like. People didn't know what it was. And so they internalized that fear, and they came up with these horror movies that depicted, queer individuals as literal monsters. And I think like we're only just starting to come out of that. And I think it still exists, but it was raging for a while. And so now I think it's going to be really fun for all audiences to experience something truly new, and experience a kind of pivoting of that narrative. And no one is, and it's not like anyone is safe either from the horrors of the story. For instance, in the second one act, Daddy's Girl, this, middle-aged lesbian couple, Pat and Mel, go to Pat's childhood home because they've had to put her mom in a assisted living facility, and because they thought she has, they're saying she has dementia, and she's saying, oh, your dad comes and visits me every night. And meanwhile, Pat is like, well, daddy died when I was 15 years old, so you're not well, mom. And then daddy does come, and the ghost of daddy does appear to Pat and Mel that evening, and Pat never came out to her father. And so this, is now something that she's desperately trying to hide from him, that she's a married woman, that she's married to another woman. And so they have to, pretend like they're not. And this regression starts to happen that actually kind of shows Pat also in this almost grotesque way as she's regressing and denying her own sexual orientation and denying her wife to please her father. So, you know, the horror there is it's twofold. It's the daddy coming home and kind of like this expectation of the patriarchy of heteronormativity kind of putting pressure on this lesbian relationship and creating this regression, but it's the regression itself, which is something that, you know, Pat is also responsible for allowing herself to, you know, for hiding her truth and who she is and for trying to please her father and regressing back into this, you know, little girl version of herself. So, you know, the horror comes from many directions.
Interview, as you two know, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. And of course, we've had the distinct pleasure of having you both on our show before. So I want to actually ask the two of you, how is it that you came into the performing arts? And Nick, can I start first with you on that, please?
Yeah, I was in middle school and my math teacher, Christy Anderson at the time, now Christy Wilhite, whom I'm still friends with, was directing a production of Annie, and she asked me if I would work the box office. So I went and I worked the box office, and I was supposed to do the first night, but then I ended up going back like the entire run, which was like four nights in the middle school, you know, cafeteria. But I kept going back because I just fell in love with like the culture. It wasn't even Annie, you know. I was like, oh, this is nice, but it was really just like the vibration of like being in a creative space in which like people are all collaborating to create something together. There was a certain magic and charge that I think captivated me immediately. And then I never left. So I thank her, I credit her. She's coming to see the play, Christy. She also came with me to audition when I was auditioning for schools for undergrad a long time ago. So she's been one of my biggest cheerleaders, but I do credit her for introducing me to this gorgeous art form.
That is incredible. Shout out to teachers. They are so amazing. Joey, how about you? How is it you came into the performing arts?
You know, Andrew, I was just an exceptionally talented child. it was kind of like I was pulled into it, Andrew. No, I I don't know. I just always loved to pretend. I never wanted to stop pretending as a kid. I wanted to keep doing that. And I realized that I could do that if I, you know, was in like community theater and then high school theater and kept going with it.
I adore that. Yes. Shout out to the exceptionally talented child that is Joey. Well, I know we've had you both on before, but I can't let you two go without asking my favorite question, which of course is, what is your favorite theater memory? Or in this case, what's another of your favorite theater memories?
I, you know, the last time I came on, I didn't know how to answer this question either. I don't know. It's hard because whenever someone asks me, like, what's my favorite play I've worked on, I always say it's the one I'm currently doing because it is. I just am in love with the process. I'm in love with the people I'm with in the room. And so I guess, like, it sounds so, like, cliche, but I guess, like, I'm making it right now. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this. But I really feel that, like, I'm making some of my favorite memories in this moment. I've seen a lot of really great theater, but I think it's just a gift and a joy to be in the creative process. And so it's hard to name one thing for me.
That is a beautiful answer. No, that's so wonderful. I love that. Thank you for that. Joey, how about you? What's another of your favorite theater memories?
I'm going to go, you know, back to a childhood memory again, like I did last time with the smoking nuns. And that's all I'll say about that. They'll have to listen to the other interview. But this time I'll be on brand with, so Fright Fest at Six Flags Great Adventure in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey and we would go to Fright Fest every fall. And it was so much fun because they'd literally, you know, they decorate the whole park like it was a graveyard and ghosts and zombies walking around and actors and hay rides. And And I remember the spectacle of this like big Halloween show that would happen. It would happen on the water. And at one point, this witch would fly in from across the water. And I still don't know how they did this. And I don't even remember, like, I don't even know like how real this memory is. Like, how much am I remembering what actually happened or how I filled in the blanks as a kid? But like, I remember her like flying across the lake and like then a big, like, spectacle, smoke and sparks, and then she appears like right in front of the audience in this like crazy makeup, like Angelica Houston from The Witches, with like the broom, and she's whatever, trying to kill Bugs Bunny or something. But just it really stuck with me, and I think I fell in love with theater as spectacle in that moment. And I don't think, in my last play, it was really the spectacle was the actor, David Greenspan, who performed all of the roles in that play. And in this play, I think, all of these actors are so talented, and they each also can create spectacle. But I think the frame of the play also is a spectacle, and the drag numbers and the, so spectacle is, has kind of exploded out onto the stage in a different way with this play, and I'm really excited to experience that, and it ties in with that memory for me.
That is a fabulous memory as well. Yes. Thank you both for those. Those are wonderful. Well, as we wrap things up, I'd love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline we might be able to plug for you?
I'm workshopping a few things, but they're not being publicly presented. So no, come see this. We run for an entire month at the Tank. How about you, Joey?
Yes, come see this. This is the big thing that's happening right now. And I'm working on some stuff, and I might have a public showing in the fall at Theater Lab on West 36th Street, right across the street from the Tank in the fall, a play that I'm working on about my grandmother, who was a person who was, kind of spooky and witchy in her own way, and saw ghosts. And it's a kind of mystery that I'm unfolding. But for now, at the Tank on West 36th Street, this is full steam ahead, and I'm really excited to share this with everyone.
That is so fantastic. And it now leads to my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Midnight Coleslaw's Tales from Beyond the Closet, or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
You can go to thetanknyc.org for tickets and more information. You can visit my website, joeymerlo.com. My last name's Merlo. I also have Instagram, Jojo Merlo, JoeJoeMerlo.
And for me, Nick James Brown, BROWNE.com. You can get tickets through my website as well. Thank you so much for having us, Andrew. This was so nice.
Thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me today. It's so wonderful to get to see you again and talk with you again. And thank you for sharing this amazing show. I will be there. I will be there with bells ringing. I cannot wait to take this in. So I thank you both so much for your time today.
You're the best, Andrew. Thanks for
Thank
having
you.
us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. My guests today have been the incredible playwright Joey Marlowe and the amazing director Nick Brown, who joined us to talk about Midnight Coleslaw's Tales from Beyond the Closet, playing May 31st through June 23rd at the Tank. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. You need to come out and join us for a Stage Whisper night out at the theater. Get to thetanknyc.org and get your tickets for this phenomenal show. We're all going to show up. We're going to pack the house and have a great time with this work. As I mentioned, it's one of our top five most anticipated shows of the summer. We are so excited to finally get to see this whole thing. So make sure you follow our guests, and we'll have their contact information posted on our episode description, as well as our social media posts. And then head to thetanknyc.org. Get your tickets for Midnight Coleslaw, playing May 31st through June 23rd. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.